From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast.
Welcome to the September 2022 episode of the Bletchley Park podcast, Veterans Reunion 2022. Every year on the Sunday closest to the anniversary of the staff first arriving at GCNCS in 1939, we hold a Veterans Reunion. And these have always been the most special days, I think, for anyone involved with Bletchley Park. To get to see so many of our veterans together, enjoying themselves and meeting old friends and new friends even. Now, obviously, since 2019, it's been impossible for us to hold a reunion due to the global pandemic. Today, 3 years since our last reunion, we get to hold our first real Veterans Reunion again. In the planning coming up to this, we weren't sure how many veterans would be able to get here. In the 10 years that I've been involved with Bletchley Park, we've had upwards of 100 veterans at times. So it was with some trepidation we wondered how many we would get, not just for how many are left with us, but also for how many would feel safe enough to come out. Today, we've had 20 of our amazing veterans come to Bletchley Park. Now, in the past, I've had a group of people help us and act as roving reporters to capture as many veterans' stories as we possibly could. But with this year being the first one back, and because I felt this is quite a poignant day, we've decided not to have a gang of us here, and there's just me today. So I'll be bringing you a number of interviews with our veterans, and hopefully still give you a good flavour of what this special day means to them and means to us to be able to put it on for them again. See, Ruth, now I know it's a reunion.
Yeah.
Because you've managed to get the front and centre.
I'm at, oh yeah, well. Yeah.
You're in your place that you should be.
Naturally.
Okay, so I think that's everyone. Is that everyone?
I thought there was another couple, but maybe not.
Is anybody not here?
Who's hiding?
Hiding.
I'm gonna go for it. If you all look in here, this is the important one. Don't worry about anyone else. It's all about me today. Me. It's my favourite subject. Hang on. So let me just do something here. And I think we're going to go for a picture. What do you reckon? Let's go for it. Okay. So if everyone looked towards me.
Oh, we got one more.
We were so close. Almost there.
Oh, there's another one.
There's
two more.
Oh, there's another one.
Oh, jeez.
That's going to ruin my display.
Wheelie turn.
Right, now is everyone here?
I guess so.
How about that?
A bit more. Perfect. Right, I think we're ready to go. Right, who's missing now? So if everyone looked in here like last time. Okay, we're going to go for it. Ooh, hang on, it's quite good. Hang on.
Lost his memory card.
Yeah, I know, I'm just looking. Don't joke. Okay, here we go. We're going to get another one. Yeah. And then one more, please. All looking at me. And if we can all say Bletchley Park. Bletchley. Hey. There we go. And last one, I think. Thank you very much. Perfect. Thank you.
Excuse me, everybody. Just before our veterans move, can I just please ask you all, these amazing people, we owe so much to them for all they did all those years ago for us. Still here, so stoic. Not having had one for 3 years, this is a really special day. And I would just like everyone to give three cheers. Hip hip!
Hooray!
Hip hip!
Hooray!
Hip hip!
Oh, of course. Come on. Oh. Right, so you don't need to smile if you don't want to. Oh, look at that. Look at that determination. That looks lovely. Wow, you've done this before. Oh, you've been practicing. Oh, we've got you smiling now. Okay, and then last one. full time.
We have like a side. Oh, look, she's looking at us. Not this way.
That's good. Lovely. Last one, I think. There we go. Come on. Thank you very much. That was good. That wasn't so bad, was it? Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Hello, my name's Will Amlott. I'm a photographer. I've been photographing for over 30 years, and I mainly do portraiture. Today we're at Bletchley Park, photographing the veterans.
Our first reunion in 3 years, Will. And slightly different this time, because we do have lower numbers, which is a bit of a benefit for you, for your main photo of the day, because you always take a group photo of our veterans, don't you? How easy is that to normally do?
So when I do the group shot, there's a lot of people involved. We have to clear out the background. I have to be up a ladder. There's lots of people, lots of chaos, and it's a lovely shot. But today's really special because I've been given the time to really get to know the individuals and photograph them and try and bring out their personality and their history in the picture. And it's a wonderful opportunity for me, and I'm absolutely loving it.
I think that's probably like the main benefit for you today, isn't it? That you don't normally get the time to do what you mainly do, which is portraiture. Yep. Normally you kind of go around, you do reportage of the event us, don't you? You do the group photo.
Yep.
But today you've set up a little booth and you're taking individual portraits of our veterans.
It's a real privilege to be able to do it. It really is, because it's history. I'm documenting history, and not in a really intimate and interesting way. And I really hope that the pictures show that.
Oh, and, I'm sure they will.
Yeah, and in a slightly different way. So not in a sort of dark and sort of moody way, but in an optimistic way, in a celebratory way, I think. Yeah.
Hello there. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. Thank you. And would you be able to sit in my chair, or would you be comfortable?
You can sit on the chair.
Well, I'll pay much as I get there.
Yes. Well, there's no hurry.
We'll get you there.
Well, don't worry, it's not very far. We'll
get you. Get me closer. Me.
And we wanted badges taken off as well.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So
you're anonymous.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think it's so we can get a better look at that lovely medal as well.
It's a secret, really.
So no showing off, just stay still.
I won't move.
You got your good side.
Okay, so if you just look at me, let me have a look. Let's have a quick look. Oh, it's a good one. Oh, let's do this.
Actually, I meant to bring my iPad.
And then look at that smile. Wow. Lovely. Really nice. Just there. That's absolutely lovely. Beautiful. Thank you. And then if you just put your chin down slightly. Oh, look at that. Come on. I don't think we get any better, but look at that. And I think last one, for old time's sake.
It's a good job it's not raining, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Lovely. Well, we had a plan B.
I'll tell you what,
oh,
right. Well,
see, it's secrets. Yeah. Can't recall them, you know.
I can't believe that. As we were growing up, I always knew my father was in the RAF, and Mum just said, well, I was in the ATS doing Morse code. And for many years, that's how it was. But it was not until about the late 1970s that the story of Bletchley Park came out. And Mum saw something on the television one night. And she said, oh, yes, I was involved with all of that. And then we found out a lot more. Mm. As I say, because Dad always used to tell us about his RAF days.
He had a great time.
But, Mum, it was just, I was in the ATS. I was up in Harrogate, Forest Moor, these sort of places, but didn't
you kept it secret?
The thing. You were quite horrified when people started talking about it.
Yes.
You know, you signed the Official
mother,
Secrets Act.
That was in the 70s. I said, that's what I used to do, you know. And I can still do my Morse. Di-da-di-da-di-da.
Do you know what?
Can you read it?
I think you were the very first veteran I ever interviewed, Kay, 10 years ago. And you're not the only one. All of you girls, because you were girls at the time, who did Morse, all of them can sing Morse back to me still.
Yeah. Yes, I can.
Mm. It's in there, isn't it?
Well, it's not so much backwards. Well, da-di-di-di-da-di-da-di. Well, I can go right through the alphabet.
Yeah?
Not very well. I have to think about it coming back.
How does it feel to be back here after 3 years?
Well, it's marvellous, really, you know. To think that I'm still here to come back, but the thing is, I don't know anybody left. All my friends have died, you know, so I'm the only one now, so I don't know anybody.
Well, because I know what you ATS girls are like. There's not many. There weren't many of you here anyway.
No.
So when you meet up, you get quite good friendships, don't you, with you ATS girls? Good,
yes. Oh, yes.
So you've got Betty here, who's ATS.
Yes.
You haven't actually spoken to Betty before.
So no, I haven't.
In a way, it's very nice because we still met somebody new.
Mm.
And she's lovely. Yeah.
Yes. Well, she is. Well, she's very clever, really, because
well,
she
you
can
were very clever.
Yeah, you were. don't think you were.
I just wanted
to
have...
In fact, we had to correct Bletchley Park with their competition,
we did.
Didn't we?
Yes,
their,
we did.
In their Codebreakers book.
Yes.
Oh, did you?
Yes. We couldn't finish the...
We couldn't solve it because there was a mistake.
Yes, they got G's and N's.
They could have lost the war.
The same as well. Instead of a G and an N, it was an N and a G or something like that.
They'd have been on a charge if that had been you, wouldn't
it? Yes. I've never been on a charge.
Of course you weren't.
Well,
narrow escapes.
I might have run because I just washed my hair, I think, and I just missed my Arthur when... We weren't married then, but it was somewhere, and my hat slipped off my hair, and there were two girls walking along, so they put me on a charge. So when I went to the sergeant or something, she said, "Oh, how stupid."
So they let you off?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Unless you had clean hair.
And who have you got with you today, Kay?
My daughter and my son, Barbara and Brian.
And I think two very proud children.
I'm very proud of my children.
And we're very proud of you.
Okay. It's been 10 years since I interviewed you. You did one with Astrid, our German reporter, a few years ago.
Yes.
But it's lovely to see you here again and have a wonderful day today.
Well, thank you very much. I shan't forget it.
And last thing I want to say is, can I thank you for your service?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. I don't know if you remember me, Pat. I interviewed you for the podcast a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And you did a lovely interview for us.
Did I?
You did. And do you know that your voice
is
in the new exhibition?
No, I didn't know that.
You're in the new exhibition.
Oh, really?
We've got a piece from you. Around the exhibition, we've got about 20 listening posts where people can listen to Vetchen's memories. And, of course, we've got a bit of you talking. I think it's one of the letters to your mum.
Oh, right.
Because they're lovely, aren't they, those letters?
Yes.
How have you been keeping?
I'm keeping fine, yes. Apart from my poor old legs, they don't want me to walk around any longer.
Well, I'm nearly half your age, Pat, and my old legs don't like it either.
I was already earmarked for taking the Japanese course. Of course, I wouldn't have known anything about what it was for and Bletchley Park and that sort of thing, because one of my school friends, one year ahead of me, and his younger brother, who was in the same year as me, was on a Japanese course at Bedford and was moving on to Bletchley Park. And somehow when I must have told him in a letter probably that sounded an interesting thing to do, and he worked out how to get me on the list, as it were. He told me who to apply to, and I was invited for an interview at Bedford in the spring of that year with Captain K, who was the admin officer. He asked, of course, the usual questions about what I like doing at crossroads and that sort of thing. And I suppose because I had already taken and passed a scholarship exam for Cambridge earlier that spring, he evidently thought I would be suitable.
What's it like to be back here today?
Oh, well, it's memories. Yes. Of course, the place has changed such a lot, obviously. But it's great, really.
Do you feel happy coming back here, or is it sad? Or
I feel quite happy. Yes. But it's really shocking how few of us there are left. I mean, 3 years ago, when we had the group photograph, there were about 60
Well, there was more
about
than that.
60.
There
at
was
least.
More than that. Yeah.
Well, the,
well, you won't have to fight to get on the front row this time, will you?
No. And now there's now down to 19 listed on the other program. One of those apparently is not here.
No.
It's the very person I wanted to meet because she apparently was also into Japanese decrypting.
Well, that's Murphy's Law for you, isn't it?
Yes.
Betty Webb is here. She works in the Japanese section.
Oh, yes, I've been speaking to her. Yes, yes, it's lovely. Yes. And she's going to be 100 next year.
She is indeed.
Yes.
And how young are you now?
I'm just 96.
Oh, you're a child,
I
aren't
know.
You?
Yes, yes.
Is it nice to get your freedom back in a
yes,
way and come
yes,
back?
Yes,
yes. It's really lovely to see you here again today. Again, because I always say this, can I thank you for your service, Pat?
Oh, it's only just a... They did a big splash about me in the local paper a month or so ago.
You're all so modest, all of you. You all say, I didn't do anything, it wasn't important, but it was. And I want you to know that people of my generation, yeah. people today, still appreciate what you did
yes,
for us all.
Yes, I understand that. I feel very honoured.
Well, it's
that,
an honour to meet people
forget
like
me.
You.
Yes.
Well, you have a lovely rest of the day, Pat,
yes,
and
I
thank
will.
You again.
I will indeed, Mark.
Dear Mother, I haven't time to write much now, but I thought you would like to hear again this week how I'm getting on. Well, I think I shall like Bletchley very well. It is not nearly so rigidly military as I had expected, and there is an immense variety of recreational activities, so that I shall have plenty to do in the evenings. Thus, on Wednesday, I went to the last of five performances by the drama group of The Way of the World by Congreve, and they evidently have a very high standard. Last night I came to the play reading of The Taming of the Shrew. Tonight there is a piano recital by Nina Milkina. I think there is also a show by the Film Society. Tomorrow night I shall probably go to the first rehearsal of the opera The Bartered Bride. Then, in a week or two, the Ballet Rambert is coming, and there are frequent gramophone recitals. Other subjects, which flourish but hold less attraction for me, are art, poetry, architecture, sculpture, dancing, and reels. As for life in the camp, it is fairly free and easy. We haven't heard anything about military training yet, and very few of us have started going to PT in the mornings. There are four of us in my hut, Sainsbury, White House and Pennycook, and the rest are distributed among other huts. So I'm not on my own.
As listeners know, I've been coming to the veterans' reunions. Well, this is my 10th year now. So episode 2 was at a veterans' reunion. So you'd think by now I'd have met everyone who's ever coming. And I suddenly see a lady that I've never spoken to at a reunion. Now, would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Anne Chetwynd Stapleton. I first came to Bletchley in 1941 as a Wren. My name, surname then was Pease, and I worked in Hut 11 as a bomb operator. And later I worked at Wavendon and for a short time at Gayhurst, another out station.
Yeah, Gayhurst Manor, yeah.
Yeah. And then I left Bletchley Park and went to Colombo, where we were working on Japanese codes.
As I said in the introduction to this, it's really strange because we've never met. It's really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, but usually when I've been here before to reunions, there have been such a lot of people. Well, of course, this year,
yeah,
there are not so many.
It's a wonderful day, and it's wonderful to see you all back here.
Yeah.
But obviously it's tinged with a slight amount of sadness because there are a lot less here.
Yeah. But it's lovely to come and be appreciated for the work we did.
And I bet it's lovely to be back here, isn't it, today?
Yes, it is.
And who have you got with you today?
I've got two of my daughters here, Judy and Joanna.
I always ask any children the same thing, and I catch them off guard, and I say, are you proud of your mum?
I'll say.
Very, yes.
Very proud, yes. Indeed.
As you should be.
Yes. Yes. And coming here, you know, it just reinforces that, and seeing people notice that she's a veteran and giving her some respect.
At the last reunion in 2019, there was a lady I interviewed, and she had either a granddaughter or great-granddaughter with her.
Yeah.
And I said to the young girl, I said, do you brag about your granny at school? And she went, of course I do.
Yeah.
They all think it's brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah. When did your mum tell you?
Oh,
not till... when the first book came out.
74, 75.
Yes, 70s. That was the first time I told them.
Surely neither of you were...
No,
we were even at school yet then, were you?
Don't be daft.
Close to leaving.
But the thing was, because there was so much emphasis on security while we were here, and we'd signed the Official Secrets Act, of course, so you kind of put it out of your mind, I think. And, I mean, apart from meeting old friends who'd been here also, just never talked about it.
I think people find it hard to understand that when you say things like that. But what they don't tend to realise is, in 1945, you know, most of you were young girls.
Yeah.
You were just finishing here. You wanted to start your life, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
It was what you'd done here, because you'd been told you weren't going to talk about it, was so unimportant compared to creating your what was going to be the rest of your life.
Yeah, because I met their father when I was in Sri Lanka.
You're not the only one, are you?
Really?
No, probably not.
Gwendolyn Page. Do you remember Gwendolyn Page?
No, but she's written a book.
She met her husband in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
I don't know what you wrens were doing out there.
Oh, they were all beautiful.
We were working on Japanese codes.
Yeah, not 24 hours a day, though, were you?
No, no.
Because you all seem to have come back with a very handsome husband.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, I mean, the social life there was tremendous, because there were relatively few women, service women, compared with men. And, I mean, you were always being asked out. Yeah.
I've been to the hotel where...
Oh, the Gullface.
What?
The Gullface.
I thought it was Mount Lavinia.
Oh, yes, Mount Lavinia was...
In Colombo.
Where Dad proposed to me.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's lovely to see you here today. Yeah. It's lovely to meet you two.
And you.
And Anne, can I just say... thank you for your service.
Not at all.
You're very thought of you, and I forget to do the little ordinary things that everyone ought to do.
All I wanted to do was get your impressions of being back here today.
I think it's wonderful. So nostalgic for me. I'm 97 next birthday, and it's wonderful. And I appreciate my son bringing me, because we always have a blip. We were held up at Heathrow for about 3 hours again, but I just wish it was nearer. We come from Surrey.
Oh, that's quite a trek.
Yeah, and it's when you hit these accidents and incidents and that's... but it's... it's so nostalgic coming back.
And is it especially nice to come back after COVID?
Oh, yes, yes. Through COVID, they did a thing. They sent me a tea bag with a code on, and we had a virtual tea party sort of thing.
Yeah, you had like a reunion.
That was nice,
virtual reunion, didn't you?
And they did a video, you know, of all the years. That was lovely. Yeah, I missed it.
But nothing beats being here, does it?
Yeah, it's lovely to be back. I just hope I'll make it next year. You never know, do you?
Oh, I think you're a young'un.
I don't know.
You're a young'un compared to some of them.
I haven't got my mobility, which is a sad, but I've got my every memory.
Oh, you have. Yeah. And when you look back, are you proud of what you did?
Very, very proud.
Good.
And I think what's so important to get over to the youngsters today, what happened, you know, because, I mean,
the Battle of Britain. We used to have these sails and bomber raids go over here. And you think of all those boys in Dunkirk and that. Memories are very, very vivid. I've still got, you know, my memories. I'm still quite all right up there, but my mobility is gone. But it's wonderful.
Well, you know, things like, you know, the exhibitions we have here and
yeah, I just saw a photograph of myself in the intelligence practice.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
And things like the podcast, it allows us to tell people all around the world.
Well, I hope they'll never forget it.
What you people did. So how about you tell people your name and where you served and what you did during World War II?
I'm Miriam Ireland and I was on the telephone exchange. Yeah, that was quite important.
So you were blocky?
No, behind. I was in the mansion.
Oh, posh.
Yeah, but they demolished it straight after the war. We had a wonderful office there, just behind Denison's office. And we had a kitchen. 24/7, we did a 6-hour duty because it was, you had to have your wits about you. You know?
Yeah,
it was lovely. Yeah.
And you were in the nice warm mansion and not a breezy hut.
Looking at the way some of them worked in that bomb exhibition.
Oh.
It must have been. You know,
well, it was always boiling hot in there and stank of oil.
The code breakers office, where it's all so dark all the time.
Yep.
And so, then in Dilly Knox's cottages, they say it was so cold.
Well, the huts in the winter were freezing cold and boiling hot in the summer.
I don't remember being. And I lived in the hostels outside the gate.
Yep.
I think they built houses there now.
Yeah.
But all I had to do was to walk, you know, a small walk. And they were lovely. We had our own bedroom and shared everything else, the kitchen. It was funny, you lived with a lot of other people, but you never knew what they did.
No.
And you didn't want to know.
No.
You didn't want to know.
Well, it didn't even need to be drilled into you, did it? It was second nature not to talk about
it. Yeah. It was as if they put something in your tea to stop you, you know, to stop you talking about it. But.
Well, it's been lovely to talk to you. I'm glad you got back today.
Yeah.
And I look forward to seeing you next
year. Well, I was hoping I'd see David Seams here, but he's not here today.
Oh.
He did the oral history, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. He was lovely.
Well, I'll just take this opportunity to say thank you for your service.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
No, thank you, Miriam.
It's
lovely.
Wonderful
thank
what
you.
All the volunteers do it, that we can still enjoy it. But I suppose there'll come a day. There won't be any of us left.
Unfortunately, yes. And that's why saving things like this is so important.
I'm 97 next birthday. I was one of the youngest.
I know. I was actually working this out the other day. Female conscription is 17 and a half.
Yeah.
So if someone came very late in the war, like early 1945, the very youngest they could be now is 96.
Well, I was Churchill, you know, in the war. 43, they thought they were going to lose the war, 42, 43.
Yeah.
And I think he applied to the Foreign Office to loan out, because I was with the GPO, to loan out people. And I understood that I was very, very young. And I can't remember whether I was 17 or quite 17. And I'd only been working a few weeks. And my supervisor called me out and she said, "We want you to go to this place. Very can't tell you where you're going. I can't tell you what you're going to do. But it sounds like James Bond." But we had to meet a woman with a red carnation in. And we wore red carnations at Mainline Station. And she'll take you where you're going. And we got in this Mainline Station with her. And we got off at Bletchley. And a car met us. And we got to the gates. But we couldn't go in until we'd signed the Official Secrets Act for 30 years. And that's how it happened. And then we were only supposed to have stayed 6 weeks. But they kept one of us, and that was me, until the end of the war. And when Japan surrendered, the boss got us outside the mansion. And he said, "Your job is over. You can all go home." We were all so upset.
It all just came to an end, didn't it?
Yeah. We went the next day. He said, "Your job is over, bye."
Yeah, thanks a lot. That's been absolutely wonderful.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Miriam. Okay. I'll go and grab your son.
I'm living in a kind of daydream. I'm happy as a king. And foolish though it may seem, to me
Now, it's nice to see, I won't say an old face, because it's not as old a face as some of our veterans, but an old friend from the podcast, and it's someone who's quite unique. There's only a few people who can have this claim to fame, and it's someone who lived here during World War II, and it's Jean Cheshire. Hello, Jean. It's so lovely to see you again.
Yes, it's lovely to see you also and all the lovely people that are here.
Now, we haven't seen each other for at least 3 years, have we?
At least, yes.
Now, do you want to tell the listeners how you ended up living here?
Father retired from the Navy in 1938. Uncle Harry, who was my godfather, lived in number 2 cottage before us. He introduced Dad to the Foreign Office because they both retired from the Navy. And so Dad eventually got a job here with Uncle Harry. Uncle Harry then moved with his son and daughter and wife down into Middlesex somewhere. She, Winnie, was the youngest person to sign the Secrets Act.
And that's Wynne Ribchester, who we've had on the podcast, who you introduced me to in the very first episode, I think.
That's right, that's right, Wynne. We were all very fond as children. We always used to play together. And when we came here, Uncle Harry used to come and visit Dad here. Faye and I, when we moved into the cottage in 1940, we started to go to school at St. Mary's Church School in Church Green Road.
Yep.
We used to have to go through the back gate, used to have a pass to go in and out. Invariably, we mislaid the pass. But then they wouldn't issue us a pass anymore because we were a security risk. So they had to be on their honour, these guards, to let us in. One didn't one time. So he said, no, I'm sorry, I can't let you in. Go round the front gate. Obviously, from the front gate to our cottage, we didn't know the way. So we were crying in the guardhouse down there. And I don't know whether it was mother or father came to pick us up to lead us back to our cottage. We had some lovely times in the cottage, really. One day, mother said to us, be very quiet, you children, because we have people working next door. I didn't know until I became a steward here. The reason for that is because Dalwyn Knox and his ladies was next door doing their job, their work.
You could have lost us World War II if you'd been too noisy. It's a good job you were well behaved, Jean.
Well, we were all.
Your brother wasn't.
No. When the Americans came, we watched them playing tennis on the tennis court. We were sat on the bank, Faye and I. One day, Faye said, you ask them. I said, no, I'm not going to ask them. You ask them. But the very thing we wanted to ask was, have you any gum, chum? Which all the children were doing at that point. So,
did you get your gum?
No, no. Father said he'd got to hear of it because he knew all the Americans, you know them. You children, you must never, ever ask again. You know, he really told us off. He was a lovely father, but he was quite strict.
Well, I now see where you got telling your brother off from. You got it from your dad, didn't you?
Yes, probably, yes.
Now, post-war, when this becomes a museum, what brought you back here?
Oh, in 1992, I was in Milton Keynes, and they had a desk there if anybody knew anything about Bletchley Park.
Oh, I've heard about this, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was Peter Jarvis, and they was taking notes. So then I knew, went to the shop. Neville used to come with me there, and we'd spout to people, talk to people. And then we got to come back here. We used to come to the mansion and tidy it up in 92. Anyway, we both came back at different times, you know. I started as a steward in about 93 when the Duke of Kent came and opened the park up.
Yeah. You did it for donkey's years, didn't you?
Donkeys and donkeys.
Yeah. And yeah. Is it nice to come back today?
Wonderful, and it's lovely that I was able to bring my family with me.
Yeah, this. Tell me who you've got with you.
This is Neil, my daughter's husband.
Hiya.
And this is Melanie, my granddaughter. Hi. which is lovely. She does a lot of my business at home now, my computers and that. She's wonderful.
Is she your PA?
Yeah, she
is.
Is she as bossy with you as she was with Neville?
Not quite.
No, but she's very firm. I won't say bossy.
Oh, are you getting it back? Well, it's really, really nice to see you again, Jean. I remember when I was creating the first episode and you took me into the ballroom and introduced me to Wynne. We didn't have a dance, but you introduced me to Wynne, and Wynne was my very first interview I ever did for Bletchley Park.
Yes.
So in a way, we can thank you for starting the Bletchley Park podcast, can't we?
Wow,
and we've been going
marvelous.
10 years.
There you go. Yes, yes.
I can't pay you any royalties, I'm afraid. But Jean, thank you so much for coming back today, and thank you for everything you've done for Bletchley over the years.
Yes, I stood here for quite a number of years, but I had to give it up in the end. The travel was getting me down, you know, but now I've got company to bring me back now.
It's lovely to see you again, and it's lovely to see that smile again, and to get told off by you. You look after yourself, Jean.
Like I used to tell Neville off, eh?
Yeah.
The mere idea of you, the longing here for you, you'll never know how slow the moments go till I'm near to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. For those who don't know, I'm Ian Standard, the Chief Executive of the Bletchley Park Trust, and as always, it's my pleasure to welcome you to Bletchley Park. I understand today we have 20 Bletchley Park veterans and nearly 100 family and friends. So welcome to you all. It's great to see you here, and I hope so far you've had a good day. As you can see, the weather's been kind. I thought it was going to rain at one point, but actually the sun's come out, which is fantastic. And before I proceed into some of the detail, I'd just like to thank my home team for all their hard work. Rebecca Foy, some of you know, hand up, and all her team within all the operational organisation, and Sarah Harwood, our new director of development. Some of you might have met her, some of you probably haven't. She's been with us about 9 months now and leads a team with Sue Litchfield and others who do our development and look after our veterans.
Hello, Ian Standen, Chief Executive of the Bletchley Park Trust.
It must be with a sigh of relief you get to speak to our veterans at another veterans reunion, Ian. I bet there were days where you didn't think we'd have another one of these.
Yes, it's been, as you know, a challenging last couple of years, and clearly we've not been able to host veterans back on site, you know, for various reasons, but largely, you know, to their own health and safety.
Yeah.
So it's great to have 20 of our Bletchley Park veterans back on site today to gather together, to meet each other, in some cases make new friends, which is amazing. There's still people they haven't met.
The numbers are getting less, but in some weird way, there always seems to be someone who's either never been here before, or they meet people they've never met before. It's strange, isn't it?
Very, very strange. And it's been great to see some new friendships made and old ones, you know, rekindled, which is fantastic.
And they've all said the same thing, all the veterans I've spoken to today, that they thought it was a lovely gesture doing the virtual reunion last year online, but nothing beats being here today.
No, absolutely. Nothing beats being here today. And they've all had a chance to look around the new developments on site. There's lots of stuff going on since they were last here, which I know we'll talk about in just a moment. But it's great for them to see what's been progressing and to bring their family and friends back and show it to themselves. Mm. As you know, the exhibitions we opened this year were the Intelligence Factory, which is a permanent, you know, long-term exhibition about the growth of Bletchley Park in the sort of the back half of the war, but also a temporary exhibition, The Art of Data, which talks about visualising data and is part of a series of exhibitions that we'll be doing that touch on new subject matter with a sort of look back to the past. So the next one in preparation will be an exhibition about artificial intelligence, which will be the next temporary exhibition. And then we are also developing, early stages at the moment, a standalone exhibition about the Y stations, which will become part of our, again, permanent stable of exhibitions.
And that's not all that's happening here, is it? We've got some quite major building going on.
Indeed, and the current capital project, which saw these exhibitions, has now been supplemented by a new collection centre. We have, I think, somewhere just shy of 500,000 artefacts, both paper and sort of 3D artefacts. And to date, they've been housed in some fairly unsuitable accommodation.
Yes, but that's a tactful way of putting it. Yeah.
But the new collection centre, which takes over one of the wartime buildings, brings it back to life and makes it fit for purpose for the 21st century, a proper, high standard, environmentally controlled, fireproof, fully accessible collection centre where hopefully come towards the end of October, it'll be opened formally and it'll be available for researchers to come and look at what we've got and continue to do more fantastic research about Bletchley
Park. And that must be a first for us.
Yeah, we've had the ability to host the odd person, but in, said, unsuitable accommodation. This will be a proper collection centre with a proper research room where they can do what they need to do with all the supportive stuff around it, you know, computery and, you know, a library of the right books and what have you. So it's going to be a major step forward in terms of Bletchley Park as a proper accredited museum.
But that's not the only building project, is it?
No, so the collection centre opened in October. Beyond that, we've started work on converting Block E, wartime comms hub, into a new learning facility that has sort of two parts to it. The first is 8 proper learning spaces, classrooms in the old vernacular, where we will be able to continue to deliver our award-winning learning programme. As you know, pre-pandemic, we were 30,000-odd student visits a year. This will allow us to go up to 50,000 plus student visits, and we know the demand is out there for that. And the other part of it is a new lecture theatre kind of auditorium, which will allow us to seat 250 people in for talks, lectures, and whether they are part of the learning programme or our public programme, or indeed things for corporate sponsors to come and bring their staff on site. It'll be a major game changer in terms of our ability to do that sort of stuff.
You must be really proud of that because, you know, not beating around the bush, the pandemic hit our education side severely, didn't it? To get that back up to the levels it is now, you must be really proud of that.
Yeah, I'm hugely pleased. I said we were, said, 30,000 in 2019, 2 years of nothing. Not surprisingly, you know, all the students were at home in lockdown, and when they did get back to school, they probably didn't know which way was up.
Yeah.
And we actually thought that would bleed through to this year, and I've been pleasantly surprised how many schools and colleges have decided to take students out for extracurricular activity, and we benefited from that. So I said we're going to be probably almost back to 2019 numbers by the end of this year.
That's brilliant,
which is actually brilliant. And when the learning facility opens for the 2023-24 school year, we'll be able to, said, host a lot more.
That's fantastic. Well, from strength to strength.
We're not out of the woods yet. There's still quite a lot of uncertainty in the current environment, as our listeners will know and experience in themselves. So, you know, it's not over yet. We've got the current economic crisis, fuel crisis, and all the rest of it to get through, and that will have impact on people's ability to go out and enjoy sort of leisure activities. So we fully expect that we'll have to bear some of that impact over the next year or two. But we've got a great team here who are going to cope with that, continue to work at what we're doing in terms of the long-term developments, and all being well at the other side of this crisis, because there's always an end to these crises. We'll be in a really good place to continue the growth and development of this place as a great museum and heritage site.
I better let you go and have a cup of tea with some more veterans.
Thanks so much. Good.
Thanks a lot, Ian.
Good talk. Bye.
I see your face in every flower, your eyes in stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
I'm Alex McFadyen. I'm the editor on Ultra, the official Bletchley Park magazine, which is published by Culture Shock, who I work for.
Now, Alex, I don't think we've had you at one of our reunions before. You're here to get a bit of a flavour for the next magazine, aren't you? You're going to do a piece about today.
Exactly. We're going to be doing a report on the day because obviously it's the first one in 3 years. It's my first one ever. Really interesting day, and it's so great to have the veterans here. I mean, some of the conversations that have been happening have been absolutely fascinating. And obviously for them, it's seeing old friends. In some cases, they might not have even seen each other for 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, it's a special day, definitely, and we've missed it a lot. And I think, actually, what might be nice is instead of the listeners having to listen to my gruff accent, I think I'm going to get you to interview Betty Webb and Pat Davis for us. How do you fancy that?
Absolutely, I'd be really keen to do that.
I've decided instead of me talking to you two ladies, it's a nice way to bring Alex into the podcast.
We can tell him anything we like. Yes.
If I know you're lying, I'll wink at you.
I was going to say, in fact, we can make it up. Yes, well, hello, Alex.
Hello, hello, hello. Very nice to meet you both.
Yes. Were you billeted at Woburn Abbey?
No, because Pat was down on the south coast.
Oh, yes, of course.
Whereabouts down on the south coast?
Oh, well, I was at Lyme Regis, and we could listen to the Brittany, I suppose, coast. We could listen anyway to the ships using the ports opposite and to the lighthouses. We got quite a lot of information from lighthouses saying, put on your lights at 8 o'clock, you know, whatever it is. So that's how we knew the Scharnhorst and the Gneisenau were coming up the channel. But then later I was at Abbotscliff, which is midway between Dover and Folkestone. And we're very close to Cap Grinet and the harbours like Calais and Boulogne. Mm. So that was much the most productive of our stations. And before that, I was up on the Yorkshire coast, which we could cover sort of long range in the Baltic harbours.
Across Scandinavia.
We could even hear tanks on the Russian front.
Oh, wow.
Talking to each other. They were besieging St. Petersburg. We couldn't think what they were, you know.
Yeah.
And then we realised, oh, it's a tank.
It must have been incredibly exciting hearing these sort of things.
Some traffic, it was exciting. And there were other nights that were utterly boring. Nobody was talking, you know.
So how did you keep yourselves entertained when it was sort of a...
Well, there were at least two of you in the watch room, and probably the REM officer for at least part of the time, and somebody to take bearings. So, you know, there were other people. You weren't alone, usually.
Mm.
But we did have to work round the clock, because, of course, they talk round the clock.
Yeah.
So.
And does this sort of ring a bell for you, Betty?
I wasn't involved in that side of the house. I mean, Pat is talking about signals, whereas I was here doing just clerical things, depending on what was thrown at me. A lot of it was registering the messages which Pat would have been taking down. They all had to be registered under date order. Nothing in the clear, just groups of five letters or five figures. Mm. But for purposes of passing them on to, it was Major Tester at the time, who was a German expert, and he was able to translate or decode and translate. And I could, if he said I want something from last Monday, I could turn it up and give it to him. Although that was the only thing that was on the message, was the date.
Yeah. And then obviously you two met subsequently after the war, we think in Edinburgh. Were you introduced? Is that how you first met? Were you introduced?
Well, in Edinburgh, it was Tessa, wasn't it, who organised
yes,
it?
Yes, at the Edinburgh Festival.
At the Edinburgh Festival. But I think we'd met briefly before.
I think I'd met you before that.
Yes, yes. Probably at one of these reunions, I would think. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And did you find that you sort of immediately started swapping stories about your wartime work, or
well,
did you
yes,
just
I
get
mean,
to know each other?
There's a tremendous rapport between service people generally, but particularly Bletchley, because it was a unique situation.
Mm.
Very unique. And we couldn't talk about our work, even to people we knew had actually been here. We're still here.
You yeah.
still had to be very careful in it to talk rubbish, really. There used to be reunions in Bedford.
Oh, yes.
2 or 3 days we had.
I bet they were good fun. A few
yes,
days away.
Because it gave us all an idea of the whole picture, which we hadn't been able to discuss before. But the reunions there were simply for former Bletchley or Signal people. And we were given talks about what each one did. And that was how I put the picture together anyway.
And that's when you begin to learn the sort of significance, partly,
yes,
I suppose,
yes,
of the work.
Which before was a case of isolation, really.
Mm, absolutely. And obviously you mentioned that you couldn't tell people, you couldn't talk to people.
No, that's
so,
right, not even our parents.
Exactly, and that must have been incredibly hard.
It was. I think it was more difficult for them than it was for us.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that I couldn't say anything, but my father might have understood, because he was in India in the First World War.
Right.
So he would have had an inkling, especially as I was able to go home wearing my intelligence corps badge, would have given him an idea
and give a hint
of what was going on.
Was that a sort of deliberate, like,
yes,
like hint?
But, you see, I could telephone to them, but they couldn't telephone me because they didn't know where I was anyway.
And any post was directed to a post office 111, I think it was, in London. And the post was brought up by dispatch rider to here. But that was very, very close up.
And what about for you? I mean, did you find it difficult not sort of speaking to your family about the work that you were?
Well, the family were very good about not asking. And my father was away in the army anyway. And my mother was keeping things going, being an air raid warden, looking after two grandfathers. One of them had to leave Bath because of the bombing. So up in Lancashire were the two grandfathers and my younger sister and brother. You know, she was having quite a busy time and she was very discreet. She would never have asked. And of course, my father was away in the army or being a prisoner. And we didn't see him till the end of the war.
And after the war, did you discuss it?
No, you couldn't until 1975.
Yeah.
And that is one.
So was that quite liberating then?
For me, no. I heard about it quite by chance. I was walking in the street in Birmingham, and somebody whom I knew by sight from here, I had no idea who she was, she called across the road, "It's out." I said, "What's out? We can talk." I said, "Well, I don't particularly want to." And I didn't for years.
Yeah.
Until after we had these gatherings in Bedford where we were encouraged to talk amongst ourselves about what we all did. And that way we were able to put the picture together. But it did still mean that I couldn't tell my parents until 1975, by which time they both died.
Of course.
So they never knew.
So they never knew.
No.
So now you've both sort of decided to write about your experiences.
Well, yes, I mean, we're free to do so, and where people are interested. I try and encourage youngsters. In fact, it was a very amusing time with a school in Solihull. I think they were sort of 10 or 12 years old. And after I'd finished talking, a little boy came up to me and he said, "Did you kill anybody?"
I know.
I'll never forget that.
Yes.
Which made me wonder what I'd said to make him.
Oh, yes, of course.
And of course, you'd worked in journalism, so you'd been writing.
Well, I hadn't really started. I was only thinking about how to plan a book. Mm. I mean, a lot of other people have written very well about what we did, but not quite so much from the inside as some of us could. And yes, it's you know, sort of not being able to tell your family or anything, but then there was no temptation really in the war. You wanted to keep things secret and you were horrified if people seemed to be letting secrets out. So
I think also, Pat, you're quite keen to tell the story of the Y stations more, aren't you?
I think we could do with another bit about the Y stations.
Maybe a book from a professional member of the media.
Well, it'd be good, wouldn't it?
I think it would. Do we know anyone?
I know a few media people, yes. But I think the Y stations were interesting, and we certainly kept it secret. Well, I did till the 1970s.
It would be very interesting because of the physical side of it, you know, coping with long hours and probably very indifferent weather conditions and that sort of thing.
Yes. On the other hand, you were at a small station with another perhaps 12 or so girls your own age, and an officer who also knew German, and one mechanic. And, you know, it was, in a way, quite a, I wouldn't say pleasant way of passing the war, but, you know, it was privileged.
Privileged, yes. What about accommodation when you were on the South Coast? Did you live in a camp or what happened?
Usually it was a small private hotel or large family house. Abbotscliff was a family house. And, you know, you just went up a drive from the road. You wouldn't have known it was there. And
you see, that's the sort of thing people don't know.
It's still there, yes.
It's a rental cottage, isn't it? Do you remember we went back there, didn't we?
We did. It was a small hotel, really, wasn't it? Mm. Looked straight across at Capocrino. And very good listening station, but very isolated. Yes. Used to hitchhike into Folkestone or Dover, change our books at Boots, you know. And now and then a dispatch rider would offer you a lift, which was fine, but I found you couldn't wear a hat because it tended to fly off. So we were clutching a hat, a library book, you know, shoulder bag, and all this, and the driver of the motorcycle. I used to hope for a lift from a staff car rather than a dispatch rider. It's very kind
I'd
of them.
I'd be terrified of coming on the motorbike.
It's a long hill down to Folkestone.
Yes.
I went flying down that.
So you had some adventures.
Oh, yes, yes. No, they were very kind, the dispatch riders, but, you know, and you couldn't say no.
Yeah, of course not.
Also, the Wren skirt is extremely narrow. We had to wear uniform when we went out. So actually getting onto a motorcycle.
In a tight skirt.
You couldn't have fallen off because your skirt would have kept you.
But I think all these things on the sort of human side are interesting, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Because people have a very vague imagination about how things were for us.
Yeah, and the factual history has been covered so much, but those sort of personal stories, I think, are what is now coming out more.
Yes.
And, I mean, you've both got your Legion d'Honneur medals on today.
Yes.
Was that quite exciting? They came quite recently.
For me, it was this last birthday, the day before my birthday. I don't know when you received yours. Is it a couple of years, is it?
Last year, I got it. Yes. It was a big surprise because I couldn't think what I'd done for the French.
Well, I think all in all, we all did a bit.
Yes. Very generous. I went to the French embassy.
Fantastic.
And the ambassador gave it to me. We had champagne, which I don't often have. And then we went to the Ritz and had tea, and they brought more champagne. So I was a bit careful.
What a shame.
Yes.
Could have taken it home for Christmas.
Very generous of the French. I mean, you know, we've been working for all the Allies, really, so very kind. We used to listen to quite a lot of French ships and tanks and things talking when I was at Dover, at Abbotscliff. You could hear the radios from across the channel.
Had some interesting conversations, no doubt.
Yes.
The French servicemen.
And then there were a lot of free French, very homesick poor chaps.
Oh dear.
Around in England, longing to get back to France again, which they did eventually. No, I think French were very generous. Where did you learn German?
Well, my mother was a teacher. She was out in France. She went out on the day war broke out in 1914. And she didn't speak any languages then, but she said it was so awful not being able to converse that she insisted on me and my sister learning German. We always had German or Swiss helpers in the house. And so I've always spoken German, but rather a colloquial level. But nothing very technical, which was what Major Tester found out when he interviewed me. He said, I'm sorry, but you don't know quite enough to help me with translation. So I accepted that. I knew it was right.
And you'd picked up German from your Austrian cook?
Well, yes, it started. We lived in my grandfather's house in the country in Lancashire, and he couldn't get English cooks and housemates in the 1930s. But he managed to get Austrian refugees. I remember he gave me a little German dictionary he'd found and said, you must tie labels on the drinking water taps to say this is the drinking water, because that came from a spring. And he thought it was better than the mains water. So I looked up the words and wrote Wasser für Trinken, which is not very good German.
Wasser für Trinken, yeah, that's
not very good German, but at least it conveys the message, and tied it on the taps. And that made me the interpreter for the household.
Oh.
So I spent my evenings with Mrs. Getzel, the cook, and Mrs. Krochmalnik, the housemaid, but mainly Lily Getzel. So I learned German with a slight Austrian accent, I was told recently.
Das war ein gutes Sprechen.
Können Sie immer noch Deutsch sprechen?
Kann ich noch Deutsch sprechen? Oh ja, ja. Kann etwas sprechen.
Ja, ich kann ein bisschen, aber...
Ich bin jetzt nicht...
What's the word? Flies.
Nicht so flüssig.
Yes. Thank you.
Lots of people don't really like German, so I think it's perfectly good, logical. sort of language.
I used to read Faust at one time.
Did you?
Yeah.
I like German. It's the only language I could speak at school.
Right, yes.
Apart from English.
Yes.
But I was going to leave this interview just to Alex. But bearing in mind the last 2 minutes of the podcast have been in German, and my German's too rusty.
I know.
I'm going to say thank you very much, everybody. That was a lovely interview.
Bitte sehr.
Vielen Dank.
Thank you very much.
Das war sehr schön.
Es war ein Vergnügen, ja.
Wie bitte?
Es war ein Vergnügen, mit diesen Herren zu sprechen.
Ja, ja, ich auch. Das war... Ja.
It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
Thanks to the paid and volunteer staff, visitors and veterans who took part in this podcast. To find out more, go to bletchleypark.org.uk. You can follow Bletchley Park on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine and supported by Audioboom. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.